This is John Martinka and the Getting the Deal Done podcast series. And my special guest today is Jordan Carter with Search Investment Group. Jordan is based out of Austin, Texas, and he's going to tell you a little more about what he does, his background. But in simple terms, he helps business buyers find equity to get their deals done without as much of their own capital going into the deal. So welcome, Jordan.
Thank you, John. It's good to be with you, and look forward to sharing some thoughts and some new perspectives.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your background, and why don't we just combine it with you've bought a business and what you did with that, how you did it, et cetera.
Sure. So I actually grew up in Texas and came out of school, went into kind of a finance track doing investment banking, M&A advisory, and then into private equity as an investor. And while that was a good experience, I always thought about, well, could I get actually working with the companies? I wanted to get into operations and help them actually grow the business after we bought it. So that was always in my mind. I didn't know exactly how to go about it. And I went from there on to business school, graduate school at Wharton, and discovered about the search fund pathway. It's a common pathway for folks typically coming out of business schools, relatively younger in their careers, to buy businesses. But it's a very traditional track. And that track is where you sign on, they pay you a salary, and then you're tasked to go buy a business. And then once you buy it, it's really not your business, it's they're buying the business and you're the employee, you're the CEO employee. That really didn't fit what I wanted to kind of pursue. I wanted to do a couple things that may fit with your audience, which is control your own destiny and take a risk, take an entrepreneurial risk, and that includes commensurate reward. So when I discovered about the self-funded search path or self-funding your own entrepreneurial acquisition, I knew that was the right fit for me. So I set out on a search after graduation, if you will. It was all my own money. I didn't take any outside capital. I just started looking for businesses and interacting with brokers and other intermediaries. And I ended up finding a company in the middle of 2020, so a little bit after COVID hit, and purchased it in July 31st. So I've been running that company for the past about year and a half. A couple months after I purchased that company, my two partners and I decided, you know, we should actually help others do the same kind of transaction that I just did, which was raising most of my equity needed for my deal came from outside of me. It didn't come from me personally, and yet I retained majority control and significant, substantial, strategic, operational, and financial control. So at the end of the day, it's my company. I'm running it. I'm tasked with making the decisions, and barring something really crazy, you can't be let go or anything like that. It's really about. I also took a personal guarantee, so I took did an SBA loan to support that acquisition. But raising outside equity capital where I didn't have that equity capital at the time to buy my own business helped me think bigger and get into the seat I am in now, which is running that company full time.
Okay. So tell us a little bit of what your partners and you do on the equity raise. And what does SIG do to turn searchers into buyers with more equity?
Yeah. So a lot of people, when they set out to buy a business, they think, okay, well, how much money do I have? How much money have I saved up in my retirement account or my checking account, savings account? And they get an Excel sheet open or a calculator and they tabulate it all up and they say, I've got, you know, $300,000 or $500,000 or $1 million. So assuming I can buy a business for, you know, and it requires, let's say it's, 80% of it is with debt and 20% with equity. Well, you can back into what your maximum purchase price can be for you to own that business. Now, if you're buying that business with SBA 7A loan debt, typically you're going to have to sign up for a personal guarantee regardless. And now you just put in $1 million of your own personal cash, of which that may tap you out. You may go, that's all going into this illiquid investment of which your whole career is going to go into. Oh, by the way, and you're personally guaranteeing the debt. So you did keep 100%. Congratulations, but it's not the most efficient use of your capital in our opinion. So even if you do have $1 million, of which we've worked with people who do, they have $1 million sitting in cash. They can totally just go buy a business with that. And when we tell them about raising outside equity capital and then retaining, let's call it, 70 or 80% of the common equity post-close, and they only put in a fraction of that, it becomes very clear that they can take that cash and do something else with it. Whether they want to invest in the markets or other securities or real estate, you should diversify your own assets away from something that you're already going to be really heavily concentrated in regardless. And at the end of the day, you still have the same control, same operational, financial, and strategic control that you would have had if you had done it alone, with the added benefit that you ideally pick up some good board members. I have one board member on my company, and he's been just spectacular helping me think about growing the business, but otherwise passive. They don't come after me and breathe down your neck or anything like that. It's more so a good mutual relationship where they want to see you successful, be successful, and you want their advice because they're good investors.
Okay. So when you are helping people get that equity, what do you look for in a deal, and what do the people investing look for in a deal? And maybe you can give us an example.
Yeah. So another common, that's a great question. Another common thought point is, well, if I raise equity from outside investors, they're going to tell me what kind of business I can buy. And they're going to tell me, you can't do certain industries. We don't like that. It has an unstable historical cash flow pattern or what have you, right? And that may be typical if you're working with a private equity firm or a family office, or as I had mentioned before, that traditional search fund type of investor. They have a portfolio they're trying to manage, right? So they may not want you to buy another, let's say, software business or another HVAC services business. They may be kind of full up on that area. That's not true with our investors. So what we do to support buyers of businesses is bring a broad network diversified across background and experience and also investment track record with us that we've verified to bring that capital into your deal, your specific deal. So ideally what you do is you find a company, you get it under letter of intent, you have exclusivity on it, and you come to us and say, hey, Search Investment Group or SIG, I want to share this with you. What do you think? Do you think this would be a good fit for some potential investors in the SIG network? And we take an honest look at it and say, if it's a good deal, that's really our main criteria. Is it a good deal? Is it a good company? And do you have it kind of a good capital structure behind it and a reasonable path to generating a good return? I think that's really it. So we make that decision pretty quickly. We've gotten a lot of experience so far, closing 6 deals in 2021. And, really our financial criteria is a minimum of $750,000 in cash flow or EBITDA. And then you can go pretty high. We're working with somebody right now who's got a $6 million EBITDA business, and he's going to raise $5 million of equity and probably going to put in a very small fraction of that and be able to own essentially a $25 million purchase price asset, probably could have 70% of that company, which is just spectacular when you think about when you run the numbers. So it's typically control investments, right? We're buying out a seller, a founder owner who's retiring. That's typical. And then $750,000 of minimum cash flow annually. United States, somewhere in the United States, could be anywhere. But ideally it's a mature, high quality business, has a distinct competitive advantage and barriers to entry, and some components of recurring or reoccurring revenue, modest to high growth. These, you're going to hear this from everybody. And the reason you hear it from everybody is because it's actually good advice to go after businesses that have those characteristics. But other than that, there's no hard and fast rule, John, on what you have to have or what's disqualifying or what's qualifying. We've seen, all kinds of different types.
That's very interesting. And my comment on that is when you talk about the type of business and some of the features is, if you see someone with a search fund, every one of their spec sheets looks exactly the same. because those type of investors don't want to look for the diamond in the rough. They want the shiny one. And I don't know about your deal, but most of my clients' deals, they're businesses that are well run, but might be coasting, don't have the processes and the systems that the buyer brings to the table to improve efficiencies and productivity. And they're not the, meaning all the check boxes of a search funder, but they get there pretty quick.
That's a good point. So to reiterate, the types of businesses that we're looking for, I mean, if you have $1 million in EBITDA on a business, it's not a super well built out, has multiple layers of management, and you're going to come in and you're really going to be the CEO who's directing all these leaders, and it's not a fully mature kind of middle market, even private equity level stage business or anything like that. So there is, of course, always going to be like quite a bit of work to do. You're coming in, you're tasked with kind of, in many ways, professionalizing that business that you just bought and putting in those processes in place and hiring people. And that's why we actually set that minimum of $750,000 in annual cash flow to work with us, because that kind of gives you a shot. It gives you an opportunity to be able to invest in that business and then build it into something that hopefully does look like, John, what you're talking about, where everybody wants the pretty business that's really well run, very well staffed. It's got all its processes in place. That's typically not the case of the businesses that, buyers that work with us end up acquiring. And that's okay. That's good. Our investors get that. They understand the story. And that's part of the value creation, right? You're typically not paying top dollar prices for these types of businesses, but it's a good deep value, and you get in there and get to work and build it as the CEO, the owner.
So let's flip it around. What do you and your investors not want as far as a deal, a company, et cetera?
So some of the things that you do hear about pretty commonly are going to be echoed here, which is something that's very project oriented, has incredibly lumpy sources of revenue, and it's not clear that those revenue sources could continue. So construction generally is a good example of that, something where you're doing a big project and it may be very profitable, but how do you know it's going to happen next year? What is the story that you can communicate that's real, that supports that to be a sustainable business? Because ultimately you may own this company for 5 years, you could own it for 40 years. That's another thing actually we didn't talk about, but when you buy a business with us, it's just like if you bought it yourself with just your own equity capital. You control the timeline of when you want to sell or if you want to sell. But getting back to your question, John, so construction, project-oriented type businesses that are incredibly lumpy in terms of when those revenue dollars hit, with high working capital swings, those can be kind of tougher businesses. But also something with a lot of high customer concentration. Let's say you're a government contractor, you're serving the U.S. DoD, right, and that's 60% of your revenue base. Well, if they decide to go with another contractor, you're done, and that kind of thing is pretty scary. So again, these are the kind of criteria that I think are healthy for people to follow or avoid in this case, regardless of whether they're buying it for themselves or they're buying a company and they want to take on some outside equity investment and more efficiently deploy their own capital and allocate their own risk. So that's kind of it. That being said, there's businesses that serve the construction industry, right, that are inside it, that actually have kind of repeatable sources of revenue or capabilities. Those could be service providers to construction companies, or, let's take, say, like a financial system that serves construction companies, right? They still have to pay their bills to keep those systems in place. I mean, that's a good example, right? Right. So we typically don't have a big no list. It's really more of a, let's take a look.
Okay.
You're better off asking us.
I'm guessing restaurants are in that list too.
Restaurants, that's a good one, John. Consumer facing is typically tougher. Trendy businesses, ones that are competing in a very low barrier to entry or very high competition marketplace. We've seen businesses that are, for example, like women's exercise apparel. that's a tough market, right? And it's, you may have some good traction with social media and other things, but we typically don't find that consumer facing businesses like that are something that either we can get behind or our investors can. So typically they're business services, professional services, government services, healthcare. There's a lot of great businesses in healthcare. And then, you know, look at our website. If you go to our website, searchinvestgroup.com, and go to the companies tab, you can see some examples. We have a food distributor. We have a roofing company. We have a specialty pharmacy, a lift equipment distributor, a telecom installation and maintenance, I should say, company. And, you know, so those are good examples of just diverse areas you could go into that would work.
Okay. If there's any other things you want to get out, now's the time. Otherwise, I know you gave the website. If that's the best way to reach out to you and your team, searchinvestmentgroup.com, or if you want to give a phone number or email, now's the time. And final thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, John. Definitely go to searchinvestgroup.com. There's a lot we put on there. In fact, you can go listen to some talks we've had with buyers who we've successfully supported to raise the equity and get their deals done on outstanding terms. And I think if there's one thing I want to leave your audience with, it's just to think big. A lot of people think they got $300,000 or $1 million or even $2 million. It doesn't matter what you have saved to buy a business. You probably already have enough. We've got plenty of case studies, examples of buyers who really didn't have much personal capital to put in. And they ended up buying large businesses for healthy purchase price multiples and retained the majority equity control, are going to control their destiny. And again, there's just not as much information out there about this path. It's very opportunistic, right? It's you're doing the search, you're looking for the companies to buy. And then once you line something up and you feel good about it, you got it under LOI, letter of intent, reach out to us. We'll take a look and see if we can get you in that company. So think big. When I first started out my search, I thought, oh, well, you know, I just have a certain amount of cash. That's all I can buy. I'm limited to that size of business. And I'm glad I thought bigger. Ended up buying something bigger, much healthier company. It's a great fit. It's tapping into the values the value driving that I can give to the company, as opposed to having me do the, you know, turn the lights on and off and kind of be chief bottle washer, if you will. So think bigger, tap into your own value add, and reach out to us.
You triggered one more question when you talked about control and, you know, before about the investors, you know, they're not going to force a sale. Are there buy sell agreements with the investors that at certain point, if 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, they say, you know, we want out of this, that it triggers something?
So pretty standard. That's a great question, John. There's actually kind of a buy sell mutual agreement, a mechanism at year 5, where you as the owner can make the decision and say, you know what, I'd like to buy some of my investors out of their equities, securities, and or they can make an offer, right? They can say, hey, we as a class would love to sell back to you, the owner, the majority owner, to take us out if you'd like to. Now, it's completely mutually optional, right? There's no force. Nobody can force anybody to do anything. But it's just an opportunity after 5 years. You've run it for 5 years, hopefully discovered some awesome paths to grow it or build out new product lines or service lines. And you know, we have a good example. There's somebody who bought a business using the same methodology, and after about 2 years, basically tripled profitability and wanted to buy his investors out and continue to grow the business. So about, let's call it, half of the investors took the offer and the other half said, no, I'm good, I'll stay in. So it's really just very flexible, very supportive. I would never go back and do this any way differently. It's been just an outstanding pathway.
Great. So thank you, Jordan Carter, searchinvestgroup.com. And I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, John. Good to be with you.